This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network, and the following program is brought to you by the Vodoliak Law Group, fighting insurance companies since 1963, and TickSplits.com. TickSplits.com, no service fees. The price you see is the price you pay.
This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network. The following program is recorded live and intended for all audiences.
Radio is scripted now. We just come up with it. We don't use computers. We don't rehearse. We're going to talk about this next. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Bulls. And then we're going to have Brad Bixon. And then we're going to have all this. No. If you don't know what you're going to talk about in the top of your head before a show, you shouldn't be in the business. I don't know what you got. I feel like Vince Vaughn in a couple's retreat. The sharks are circling. Old school, baby.
You're listening to the Mike North Advantage, and it begins right now.
That's right. The Mike North Advantage starts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman, and we have another very special show for you because we have another very special guest for you. He is Chris Zorich, the former defensive lineman over at Notre Dame and with the Chicago Bears, and he is now the AD over at Chicago State University. Chris Zorich joins us briefly. We're also going to talk about those Chicago Blackhawks now making a late season run for the playoffs. How about that? We're going to talk about that signing of Kareem Hunt to the Cleveland Browns. Mike expressed his disappointment because he wanted him for the Bears. We'll talk further about that. But right now, it is time to bring in the star of the show, Mike North. How are you, my friend?
Good, Aldo. Thanks very much. And I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to the show. I mean, we got so much last week, so much reaction from the Jimbo Colbert interview. I said, you know what? Chicago Bears are gold. And before I bring this guy on, I just want to say that, you know what? He's one of my very, very dear friends. And I wrote this about him in 2013 in the Daily Herald after he went through some difficulty, just like I've been through difficulty. Anybody that's done something in their life has gone through difficulty and overcome it. And this is what I wrote about him. I consider Chris a friend, and I still consider him one of the most remarkably unselfish and charitable athletes I've ever met. He was really just one of us, but also a young man who basically willed himself to become a viable member of the National Football League through hard work. Now, there's no doubt something went wrong, but I will say this. No athlete I've ever seen in this town has done more for families in need or a person in trouble than Zorich. Chris was always there whenever I asked. I remember racing him 100 yards down a side street near the radio station. When I told him I could beat him in a race, he won. He also did some charity work helping me with the yearly Bowl-O-Ramas we planned, at which we were the first of our kind. Now everybody does these Bowl-O-Ramas. When we needed him, he was always there. My wife, Bibi, and I, we gave plenty to charities over the years, and honestly, writing a check was easy for me. And it didn't require a lot of effort. But Chris convinced me back in the 90s to help him deliver turkeys on Thanksgiving. I'll never forget the look of the faces on the people and the father who stared at me while just sitting on the couch because he was too ashamed to greet me. These are things that only I could have learned through Chris. During his prime, when most athletes cared only about themselves, he was ringing a bell for the Salvation Army. I haven't talked to Chris for a while, but I plan on it. What's up, my friend?
Oh my gosh, man, you are going to bring me to tears again. When I read the article, I was in tears.
Well, I got to tell you, I've always considered you, and, you know, they're making, I got a lot of things going on right now as far as a movie and about, and my autobiography. And you know, when I think of athletes, you know, they always bring up the argument with Ozzie Guillen. They always bring up this. They always bring up that, you know, stuff that I had with the athletes' confrontations. They never bring up the great relationships I had with guys like Jeremy Roenick or Jimmy Harbaugh or, of course, you. You made me do stuff I didn't think I was even going to do, Chris, and I think that's got to be told. And now look at you. You're an administrator, for God's sake, right?
Who knew, man? Who knew?
Let me ask
you. I'll tell you what. I remember 91, my first year with the Bears, and you guys started this show on something called The Score 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember being a guest on your show all the time, and one of the things that made it so remarkable was that, I mean, you were telling it like it is. I mean, no one at that point had ever talked about a coach or questioned a coach, questioned the player's motives. And you were just, you and Dan Zigas were the guys who were just regular people. And I think for Chicago and Chicago sports radio, I mean, you guys really started it. And, you know, the idea that you gave a voice to the guy down the street was extremely important. And so, although at the time you dogged me for being short, you know, I mean, I had a figure in stride, and I was able to kind of learn your interesting humor, and we, at that point, we became friends.
You know what's funny? You took everything in stride, and a lot of the guys did, and a lot of the guys didn't. Not, you know, that station was an acquired taste, but I thought the thing I loved about you is, first of all, you're a Chicago guy. You're a street guy. You grew, you know, I've always said you're my favorite Croatian football player of all time.
The only one, right?
I never bothered. I met you, and I said, I'll never forget when you gave me the turkeys. We met over there with the big truck and everything. And you said, Mike, you're going to Inglewood or you somewhere. And I had a convertible, a Mustang. And just a ride with me through the neighborhoods of the South Side with the turkeys in the back seat and people just staring because I had the convertible down for some weird reason. But I, you know, it was priceless. And then when I got to that house, I said, you've been through this a million times, Chris, and maybe it happened to even you. It was tough for the family, and I got to tell you something. Since that whole thing has ended, I don't know if there's been something to take its place. You know, I'm sure there's other charities and stuff, but I just think that having an athlete at the forefront at that time, you were a front runner. I mean, you were a guy, a pioneer, if you know. How hard was it at the beginning?
Oh my gosh, kidding me? I mean, I had no idea what I was doing, you know, and it's interesting that you talk about that story because I remember talking to you after that, and you're kind of explaining, I'm kind of grinning, nodding my head, because that experience was had by a lot of the people who participated. And it wasn't, now, we could have had folks come to where we were at Soldier Field. We could have had a line. We could have had, okay, a box. Hey, here's a turkey bowl. But a lot of folks that we helped wouldn't have been able to afford to come down to Soldier Field, right? I mean, those folks didn't have cars. Those folks didn't have transportation, unfortunately, like myself. And so as a kid growing up, you know, I kind of knew those circumstances. And so that's why I wanted to do this on the Tuesday that we had off from practice. We had everybody meet at Soldier Field, and that was way before Google and all this other stuff. We actually had to do the directions on a map, so it was crazy. But the idea that we were able to kind of have our folks go out into the community and help people was huge, because that stemmed other things. I mean, I remember Kirk Granderson from UIC. Right? I mean, he's this great baseball player. I read an article about how he got involved in helping people because he talked about when he was in college, their baseball team would come over and assist our foundation passing out turkeys. And so, you know, it's those things. And now look what he's done in history. Look what he's done for baseball. You know, the idea that I was a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly, exactly. You know, and the idea that you can, you know, it's kind of like waves, right? Like you do one thing, you're not sure what effect that's going to have, but it has these ripple effects. And so the next time you may see somebody, or the next time you may read an article, or the next time you want to do something, you may have a better appreciation for what someone has to go through, because that man sitting in a seat was so thankful, but it was hard for him to kind of approach you and say, well, thank you, because he couldn't provide for his family. So, I mean,
it was very
tough, right?
It was tough, Chris. I'll say that. We're with my buddy Chris Zorch, and, you know, I thought that, you know, that was one of a kind, just like the Bowlerama we did. We were the first ever to do it. For 4 years we did it. Well, we had athletes of all kinds, Evander Holyfield. We had the top flight guys, Jerome Bettis. We brought in all the Blackhawks, Bob Probert. We were the first, and what we would do is we'd have the athletes move down after each game. Because, like golf outings, you'll get to golf with one celebrity, and that's the whole 18. Here, people got the bowl with three different types. And
yeah, that was awesome.
It wasn't it good? And you know what? We were the first. Now, Kerry Woods got one. A bunch of people got them. Everybody does a Bowlerama. The Bulls do a charity thing. But Chris and I and Jeff Schwartz were the first to really start it. And we'd fly in, like, people from all over. And Chris and I didn't really have a clue. I was just praying Chris would finally get there because, you know, of obligations and stuff like that. But it was stuff like that that when it came to doing charity stuff, it was with you, and because I felt it was genuine, and I thought, I'm not going to lie, we ended up becoming buddies, because I'll never forget the one time you really got hot. You didn't get hot. You come back at me, which was good. I said that I thought there was a 97-yard line on the field, and you go, well, what do you mean? And I said, because you're on your ass, and you're back the whole time, and it indented in the field. Between the 40 and the 50. You didn't like that much. And then it escalated into the fact that I thought I could beat you in a race. And you said, listen, pal, I'm a National Football League player. I didn't get here by accident. I'll do the race. We promoted it for a month. We went, there was like 7 on a side street on the north side. There was, 800 people there.
Oh, it was awesome.
And you blew me away. And we're laughing. I put it out on Twitter now. If people want to go to North. We're laughing when we're halfway there because I was dead. And I had won street races my whole life as a kid. People used to race each other for money. I raced you. You got off that line. I knew what made you great. I knew what made you play in the NFL. It was the first three steps. You showed me that day, didn't you?
I tried. And the thing that was great about it was that, you know, it was fun. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where, you know, you're able to back it up. You know, you said, oh, Chris, come on, you're slow, you're doing whatever. You know, you said, hey, let's go race. And we did. I mean, I think those things obviously aren't happening these days. But, you know, when you talk about the interaction with the media and the players near Chicago, you know, they're obviously really good.
You were a Chicago Bear defensive tackle, a Pro Bowler racing me down the street.
I grew up in Chicago, so those races you talked about, as a kid, right. we used to do them in no shoes.
All the time.
The very summertime. That was like the best thing you could do in the neighborhood.
That's right. Who's the fastest? Who could do this? I just saw what you could do. I gotta tell you, Chris, because we only got 20, 25 minutes. You know, when it comes to what you're doing now, and you see where Chicago State's got to go, and I've looked at the history. I mean, your last All-Americans. I mean, Chicago State used to have a ton of All-Americans, whether it was swimming, volleyball, whatever you name it. What has that taught you? And where would you put between 1 and 10 where Chicago State has to go athletically? Okay?
Oh, I mean,
there's
absolutely no question that, you know, we obviously need to improve. You know, last year our women's team won one game. They actually broke a two-year losing streak last year with winning one game. On our men's side, I think we actually won three games, and two of those were against Division II opponents. So the idea that we need improvement is there. And so my philosophy is that, look, you know, we are going to be in a transition year. We need to have people that understand coaching, but more importantly, understand the game of life. And so I can't tell you on the men's side how many phone calls I got, how many phone calls from agents I got, how many phone calls from professional players, from current and former NBA coaches, from current and former other Division I basketball teams. This job, and I kind of joked about it at the time, but there are 351 Division I basketball teams. At that time, it was ourselves and Detroit Mercy. We were the only two people that didn't have a coach at that point. And I'm sure they got phone calls just as we got, but the idea that somebody wants to be a Division I coach was extremely important to a lot of people. So I had a pick of 100 people. I had a pick of former pro coaches. I had a pick of former great college coaches. But what I was looking for was someone that understood Chicago, one, but two, faced some adversity in life, because anybody could coach the game of basketball. I want you to be able to coach the game of life. I want someone who these young men and women are going to talk to 40, 50 years later. I want someone who's willing to teach them about and we're able to find someone in Lance Irvin on the men's side and Missy Opat on the women's side.
Now, let me ask you this, Chris. When you see that the demographics and where the school's located, okay, 70% African-American enrollment, which to me doesn't matter. I went to Truman College in Uptown. In fact, I loved that experience. But for some people, whatever, either way, it could be something that's hard, or the fact that the sports program was neglected for so long. In other words, what I'm trying to tell you, I'm sure we could come up for 5, 6, 7 reasons why it didn't work out, but what good would that do now? Are you basically treating this like an expansion team, your first, your second year in existence, instead of looking back in the past as you will look at when you look up the All-Americans and stuff like that?
Right, you know, you're absolutely right. And what we sell our student-athletes on when we are going through the recruiting process is what we have to offer. We have a new president in Z Scott. We have new board members. We have a new foundation. We have new coaches. We have a new athletic director. I mean, what's happened in the past is terrible. Now, we as a new unit have to move forward from that. And I'm selling our student athletes and the coaches that we're hiring on what can you do in the future? What can you do to make us great? Because we are going to be great. There's no doubt. We have tremendous talent in all sports in Chicago.
Sure.
We want to make Chicago a viable place. And we want to win those recruiting battles against UIC, against DePaul. It's going to be tough. Absolutely, yes. But I've never backed away from a challenge. I want to find coaches. I want to find players who, if you're down by 10 points, you don't think the game's over. I mean, the idea and understanding what adversity is. Adversity is not something that you know you're going to overcome. Adversity is not knowing. But forging ahead, working hard, making sure that you know what you can do. And so I kind of joke around and say, you know, hey, I've been through a lot. And I have. But at the end of the day, it's made me the person I am. And so when I'm sitting across the street from the parents of a young man or a young woman who is being recruited by Chicago State, I tell them the truth. I tell them why I'm there. I tell them that I grew up in Chicago. I'm honored to be here. I can be a lot of places, but I chose to come here because I think this is something special. And so, you know, in the last couple of, so I've been there for 9 months since I've been talking to recruits. We kind of joke around and call me the closer because I can come in there and I can talk to parents about academics.
Is that your nickname now, the closer? Is that your nickname? you got it on your business card, Christopher?
I wish. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm selling the parents on what I've done. I'm selling the parents on the type of individual I was. And I'll tell them flat out, you know, hey, I've had some good days and I've had some bad days, but I'm here now, and I'm here to make sure your daughter or your son is going to be successful at our school.
Let me ask you this. How important is it, since you grew up on the South Side, that where Keena Turner and Dick Butkus, you went Roseland, I mean, if you know the city, folks, you can't pretend with Chris or I. We know every bit of the city. So how important is it that you were number one from that area? You went to CVS, famous school, great school back in the day, especially for football with Bernie O'Brien, and you were a Bear. How more accessible has that been for instance, or as if you were maybe something else, an administrator with just a good college background?
Oh, the reason why I got the job, I was hired by our last president, and the reason why I got the job, and she told me, she said, look, you are a sitting athletic director currently, but you also know Chicago. You were born and raised in Chicago. So having a chance with your pedigree, I mean, how could I not hire you? Because when you look at born and raised in Chicago, you know, went to college 90 miles away, came back, takes the beloved Bears, went back to law school at Notre Dame, came back here and worked. I worked at a community college, Prairie State College, that I saw every day for 3 years when I drove to Prairie State College in Chicago Heights. I drove past Chicago State every day, there and back for 3 years. Every day in the back of my mind, I said, someday, someday, someday. Guess what? I'm there.
So you thought this was coming. You felt that
I knew it was coming.
Opportunity here. Well, that's cool. Now, I got to ask you about your other college, okay? Because once again, they laid an egg at the end, but at least they got there. Are you happy? No, seriously, I like Brian Kelly. I don't remember his offenses being this stagnant at times when he was at Cincinnati. Now, I know it was a whole different ballgame over there, but at least he gets them to the Final Four, because I can remember the days you and I would talk, you know, about when Lou Holtz was coach and how he had to try to change the standards and everything else. And we thought, if at the time people were saying, well, you know, the athletes don't want to go to Notre Dame anymore. They want to go to Florida State, Florida, Miami, where it's hot. Well, guess what? They've all fizzled out. What's your impression of the program? Do you think that they're going to be perennially a playoff team? Because they do play a tough schedule. And do you think that Kelly's there for the long haul?
Well, I do think Kelly is there for the long haul, and I think it's great that we finally had a chance to actually be part of the college football playoff system, because for so long, people talk about, oh, what about Notre Dame, what about Notre Dame, what about Notre Dame? Not in the conference. What can they do? Well, we showed them that we at least belong. Now we have to show them that we can beat these teams, and I think that was a huge difference, and you have to make these steps. I mean, you can't just sit there and say, oh, hey, we belong in that game. The best thing that could have happened, listen, soccer, the best thing that could have happened to Notre Dame was them getting blown out by Clemson. Because now they know the standard in which they have to play. So I guarantee you, Coach Kelly and his coaching staff went back to their war room and talked about speed. They talked about getting more players from the South. They talked about getting players that understand not only how to win, but also how to be successful academically. And you can find it. I mean, you talk about during the time that we were there, we won a national championship, and we graduated all of our guys. So right. The idea that it can't be done, I know it can be done. Believe me, it's a struggle. Now, you have to start assigning some tutors to people, but at the end of the day, you are going to get it done, and that's what's most important.
Now, you know what's funny, Chris, is I coached at Notre Dame of Niles College Prep for 6 years, and we won 20 games yearly with Tom Les as the head coach there, and I was one of his assistants. But I recruited this one kid he was about 6'6", but he was and he was from Bosnia, and he was a Muslim. And the religious aspect came into play. We almost got him anyway, because we took any denomination. The mother was fearful that he'd have to go to religion, to Catholic religious classes. We assured her that he didn't, but she ended up going in another direction. I didn't blame her. I wanted to ask you about the religious aspect of Notre Dame and if that does turn off some kids, or if it did.
Well, we had, and that was my first impression too. I mean, I'm not Catholic, but when we were there, we had the idea, we were under the impression that, hey, you know, we're going to have to go to Mass every day. Although people said we didn't have to, we did not have to do that. Do we have to take religious course for first year? Yes, you did. But other than that, they assisted individuals if they wanted to go to different denomination churches. They would have a bus that would actually take you to those places. What's interesting is people talk about that, and coaches talk about this all the time. We have Rocket Ishmael, who's Muslim.
Right.
Up on the Heisman Trophy. One of the best players in college athletics.
yeah.
at Notre Dame, Muslim. So the idea that we are not all-encompassing is a fallacy, but more important is they will support, well, whatever religion you are, they will support that. At the end of the day, it's a faith-based school.
Sure.
You don't have to be Catholic in order to be successful there. You don't have to be Christian to be successful there. It's just, it's a faith-based institution that will allow you to practice your faith. And if you don't have transportation, it will also get you to those places off campus.
Man, I got to tell you, you sound a lot sharper than you. I'm stunned here. I could just tell being back at school.
I'm the executive now, man. I'm the division one athletic director.
Well,
I got to be able to put a sentence together now.
Here's what I got to tell you, too, Chris, is that the Chicago Bears, I think you would have had a blast playing on this team. I don't know if
oh, my
you know,
God. Awesome.
I mean, because you played under the worst of times, the worst circumstances, right after you had Ditka, and then you went to Wannstedt, which was like going from Gibson's to, you know, somebody's picnic in zero weather. But really, first your impressions of this year's team.
First of all, I am so excited to be a Bear fan. I mean, the idea, especially on the defensive side, right? The idea that we have guys who are not only game changers, they're actually big playmakers. I mean,
yep.
thinking that on defense, I didn't think it happened. When was the last time you actually thought about that? I mean, even when Brian Urlacher was playing, we didn't have enough Brian Urlachers on that team where we knew that something was going to happen. Every play, there's a possibility we could either score, we could get an interception, we could get a sack,
right.
fumble return. I mean, now, again, as a faithful Bear fan, when Coach Nagy didn't play starters for the last preseason game, I thought it was nuts, as did everybody else did. Everybody was crazy.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Well, you know what's funny? It worked out. There's no doubt. But, you know, you got to hope it happens again. I think people want to see it and think it will happen again. I definitely think it will happen again. I think that Khalil Mack tipped anything over. I mean, tipped the whole thing over, changed the whole division. Just adding one player of that pedigree. I mean, I think he's the best linebacker that the Bears have had for the last 20 years. I'm sorry, Brian Urlacher. I'm sorry, Lance Briggs. I'm just telling you the truth. What kind of acquisition does that do for the rest of the team, especially in defense?
Well, you saw it, right? I mean, as soon as he walks in, the level of competition rose tremendously. I mean, I, again, being a Bear fan, being in the league, being in the ministry, understanding, I was like, oh my God, they just gave away the farm for one person. That's crazy. Guess what? That first game, within like 5 minutes, he I think he either caused a fumble, he did like for two amazing plays in a row. I was like, oh, well, that's the reason why he's worth it. I mean, the idea that you have one person who's enough of a playmaker to inspire and get other folks on the same side of the ball excited. And then now, and I guarantee you, when that defense is out, guys on offense, although they're, you know, the coaches are talking to them, they're over there looking at watching those guys play because they want to watch them. They want to see Khalil Mack play. They want to see these guys play because they're excited about it. When was the last time that happened?
I'll tell you what I found amazing, because you're a smart football player. You don't make it into pros by just being physically gifted, folks. And you don't stick around if you're not smart. And I could usually, back in the day, and I know you too from growing up in Chicago, predict what every play was going to be on offense. I can no longer do that. I can no longer do that. This guy, to me, is a hidden gem. I didn't like the hiring at first. I was fearing another Trestman type of situation. You know what happened last time we had an offensive mind. Plus, he was with the Chiefs, who hadn't bowled me over in the playoffs anyway. And, Chris, I don't know if you felt the way I did. I couldn't call a play. Every time I thought it was a run, he'd pass. Every time I thought it was going to be a pass, he'd do a pitch out. It was just, I think he had as strong a year as any rookie head coach could have.
Absolutely, and he gets awarded for it. AP Coach of the Year, Defense Coordinator, AP Assistant Coach of the Year. You know, the idea that if we sitting on our couches knew what the next play was, Okay, so what are professional teams that are playing against them? What do they know?
Right.
You know, so the idea that we are now able to be unpredictable is something that hasn't happened to the Bears in how long? Years.
Oh, my God. Well, here's the thing that I always used to, was fascinating me about Wanstead. I mean, he tried to call a truce with me and everything. I wouldn't stand for his nonsense because he was just, he's a good talker. God bless him. I'm glad he's got a good career for himself and stuff like that. But the thing that always mind-boggled me is he didn't understand that you had to win the games in your division at the end of the day to have any kind of dominance. He treated the divisional games, even though you knew, Chris, from growing up, that Green Bay, beating them was more important than beating the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, because they were in your division. So that was the thing that I was always amazed at, the lack of awareness. And I think this coach has that awareness that a lot of coaches that I can count on 20 hands did not have, except for a few.
Well, I think finally in a long time, we were able to pace. We were able to find a coach who not only understood the game and how it's played, but understands the league, understands the conference, understands the division, and understands enough that if he takes a few plays off, if he decides not to play his starters in the fourth preseason game, he knows he's going to get a lot of crap for it, but he did it anyway. And that's something that I think takes balls, right? You're a first-year coach. You don't do this. You say, I'm going to do it my way. And then all of a sudden you have players who understand that and are willing to go the extra mile for someone who's willing to take chances with them. And that's important. So you find a coach like that, you are going to find people who are going to be excited about playing for him or her. And that's what I look for being an administrator, knowing that I need somebody who goes beyond the X's and O's. I need somebody who's willing to understand the game, but more importantly, understand the players and what they have to do to be motivated.
Chris, it's great to talk to you, man. It's great that you came on. Love you like a brother. You know that. North side guy, south side guy. We did some great things. We had a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to coming down to Chicago State to say hello. And BB says hello. We all love you. And Chicago loves you. I mean, you're part of Chicago Bear legend, buddy.
Mike, you are always welcome, obviously, at Chicago State. Anytime you want to come, I will roll out our green carpet for you. We have no problem with that. The idea that you understand what it means to be a Chicago Bear fan is exciting. And knowing that we have a chance to kind of do some really good things now is extremely exciting. So I hope I can come back on sometime, and I look forward to having a chance to hang out with you more. And please tell BB I said hi.
All right, Chris. Take care of yourself and your family, okay?
All right, brother. Be good.
All right, Chris Thorch, yes. Former Chicago Bear. Oh, my God, and here he is, Aldo Gandia. What's up, Aldo?
I am telling you, that was a great interview and so great to hear Chris.
I forgot that I should have had you ask him a question. Darn it. I'm mad at myself.
That's all right. Sorry. That's all right. Well,
that was the plan because we did that with Jimbo last week.
That's right. Well,
I'm sorry, brother.
He did promise to come back, so I will be happy to be well-prepared with questions. We had a couple of questions.
Oh, you were prepared anyway. You're a bit diehard. Bear fan. I thought that he was straight up.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty knowledgeable. Sounds like a different guy to me.
Yeah.
He was always just a great, great guy, and he wears Chicago on his sleeve.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, I as soon as you told me mid-afternoon that he was coming on, I started to refamiliarize myself with what he's been doing lately, and one of the articles that I read that really impressed me was him talking about his philosophy over at Chicago State University, and he asked all of the players, what do we have to do to win a national championship? And they all raised their hands, and almost everyone to the man said, we have to go undefeated. And Chris corrected them and said, no, We have to have a great practice today. And what a great philosophy that is for all young men to learn. You don't look at the grand prize. You look at what is ahead of you now in order to get to the next step. And it usually starts with those little things, having great practices, you know, getting ready for work that day, whatever it is. That was a great example that he led, that he shared with his young men. So he's a great guy, and I'm glad that you got him on. Our listeners are really happy to have listened to Chris Zorich, and guess what? He promised to come back on, so in a few months we'll hit him up again, probably around the time that the Bears are collecting themselves for training camp. It would be great to have him back.
Oh, yeah, Chris will come on anytime. Just like Jimbo. Jimbo said he listened to last week's interview twice now.
Ah,
he said
nice.
He loved it. He says he just texted me today, as a matter of fact, and I think he wants to come on again, too, because he had a good time.
Excellent.
Awesome. Because these guys, let me tell you something. It says here, Jimbo said, thanks again, listen to interview again. Awesome. You're the best, Jimbo.
Awesome.
And I said, it was great. Lots of response. You the man. He says he'd like to come on again. So we'll get these guys again. We're not going anywhere. This is Bears Barroom.
That's right.
Where do you think we're going? It's Bears Barroom. Right? Come on.
We ain't going.
And there's all sorts of stuff. Forget about the Bears. There's more hijinks going on more than ever. I said, the Bears are over with. It was a great, great ride. You know what? There was no aggravation. Now there's nothing but. Now there's nothing but.
Well, let's talk about what happened today. It was announced that the Cleveland Browns are signing Kareem Hunt to a one-year contract. Now, he's still under an NFL investigation. We know the trouble that he had. The big story is about his violent attack on a young woman. But there's also two other investigations that he apparently had some altercations with men on a couple of situations. So he's probably facing some type of disciplinary action, whether it's 2 games, 4 games, 6 games. Who knows with the NFL? They don't really have a set way of doing that. But you tweeted out as soon as you heard the news that you were disappointed because you thought that he would be a great member of the Chicago Bears. Tell us more about your thoughts on that topic.
Well, I just think, although that you know, all these people, I mean, I get a kick out of it. The same people that don't want him to play for the Bears are rooting for Anderson Russell to hit 300 this year with the Cubs.
Yeah,
so
right.
You got to have a little consistency, number one. Number two, look, we knew he's going to be suspended. He's not going to play. I mean, he's going to pay some sort of punishment. Mm-hmm. But once he clears that, like I said last week, guys like Greg Hardy got to play. Ray McDonald got to play. Just like assassins got to play. Is this guy a bad guy? A bad hombre? Absolutely. Do we? You know, there's no doubt about it. That there were the video. He apologized again today for it. But if you're asking me, would I like him to be on my football team? And do I think I'm going to have another problem with him? Dorsey doesn't think so. Dorsey knows him, but they kept him on a short leash.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting a chance because he's so multi-talented, and adding him to the Bears would have made them the odds-on favorite to win the NFC this year.
Yep. That type of player.
It's a shame when I make sense. I got like a seventh grade education, but I sort of got you tongue tied.
You did. That type
He's
of player.
Good.
Yeah, that type of player is such a perfect fit for Matt Nagy's offense. And you got to believe that if Matt Nagy gives the guy a call and wants to talk to him about how he's doing in his personal life, didn't want to talk football, that that would have been a nice chemistry. And a guy like Kareem Hunt needs that kind of, for lack of a better way of putting it, a father figure. While I usually have zero tolerance for situations like that, it would have been nice to at least explore it. And maybe the Bears did and decided it wasn't worth taking a chance. But
Ray Lewis played.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
I don't want to hear about zero tolerance. Ray Lewis played football in the National Football League, and then we can go through another 100 names. You have zero tolerance, and I'm sure, and I believe you. You're a man, mm-hmm. Eldo, of your word.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt. But when you're a decision maker in the National Football League, sometimes zero tolerance gets bent a little bit deciding on the talent and what it can do for a football team. I believe, and I would stake it, that, and I've been fooled before, But I think this guy will be a model citizen from here on in. I think he learned his lesson. And I don't know if he's a Pac-Man Jones. Maybe he is. I always thought Pac-Man Jones was a guy that, you know, once you got in trouble a couple times, that he'd continue. And I was right up until last year. But I think this guy would make the Bears the odds-on favorite. I noticed you were a little bit hesitant, but you're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And why? Because he's the player that I think if he didn't go to Cleveland with Dorsey, would have come with the Bears and made us the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just think that it's very difficult for us people on the outside to make value judgments on this stuff without knowing all the facts. I mean, if we were to learn that Kareem Hunt has gone to anger management classes, that has been seeing a psychiatrist every week, that has been dealing with this issue of aggression towards others outside of the football field, then you have to give him a chance. But if you heard that he had missed appointments with his psychiatrist or whatever, I'm just making this stuff up, you know, then you employ that zero tolerance. But I believe everybody deserves a second chance, but sometimes, you know, people ruin that second chance for themselves. So that's
there's no doubt he hasn't even paid for the first chance.
That's right.
And he's already gotten a second chance.
That's right.
I mean, think about that. You know, there's some people who never get a second chance. This guy's gotten a second chance, and he hasn't even paid for the first chance.
All right, so
we don't even know what's going to happen. But you know what? I don't care. If he was a member of the Bears, I'd be one of the guys that would be saying I'd be absolutely ecstatic. He's a game changer. And why did Kansas City lose this year?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, why did they end up losing? Because having him out of that lineup took away a lot of their options.
Yeah, it that's definitely true.
And they
the
still
offense.
Scored a ton of points,
right.
But you had to run the football. Where was he?
Yeah.
He wasn't on your team.
Right. Their offense was definitely different after Kareem Hunt, and there's no doubt about that. No doubt about
right.
that at all. Now, we've got news that Eric Reed signs a 3-year deal to return to the Carolina Panthers. He's a safety over there. That sets the threshold for Adrian Amos as to what he should be making. If Reed signs a 3-year, $22 million contract with $10 million guaranteed, I have to believe that Amos has to be around that level, probably a little less. What do you think? Do you think the Bears should put out about $20 million over 3 years for Adrian Amos to safety?
First of all, I think you have a man crush on this guy. I'm not even going to get into a debate with you on this. I could sense it on Twitter today. You're all over the place on this. Yeah, I thought I was reading The Inquirer with Liz and Dick on the cover. You know, there's no doubt that you must have dreamt you were his agent last night, because there's no doubt I'm not getting into a debate with you about Adrian Amos, because you're the one that seems more passionate about him. I mean, if you ask me, Eddie Jackson or Adrian Amos, he's gone.
Well,
but it depends.
You don't have that.
You see what happens to football teams when they don't manage their money right. That's going to have to be one of the Bear deals. Tell us about Adrian Amos. Go ahead.
All right.
Go ahead, my friend.
Here's my contention. Finally, for the first time in about 10 years, we have a safety combination of Eddie Jackson and Adrian Amos that is probably in the top 10 of the league, and some people would argue maybe top 5. I think we should keep them together at least another 2 or 3 years. Sign them to a short term, 2 to 3 year contract, and then when Eddie Jackson's contract is up, because he's probably going to demand almost twice the amount that Amos does, then you part ways with Amos if you're in a salary cap type deal, and by then hopefully you've got a young safety to step into Amos's role. But right now the tandem of Eddie Jackson and Adrian Amos, you have to keep that together. I'm tired of having bad safety play in Chicago, and finally we corrected that problem. Let's not screw it up.
I am sold.
Okay.
I am sold. I'm with you 100%. I like the short-term deal. I like the fact that it's not going to be terribly expensive. And he's part of a unit.
Yes.
And a good unit. So you got me there. There you go.
All right.
Man, you're on fire tonight. Shoot off the flare. Let's go. My God.
Now, I probably can't do the same about the Chicago Blackhawks, but you have to admit that their little winning streak here, 7 games to get back into the playoff race, is pretty impressive. Although they're about as close to a playoff spot as they are to the bottom of the standings, so it's a a bit iffy, but what do you think about these Blackhawks? Do you think they've got a chance to maybe surprise us and get into the playoffs?
Well, I hope they get into the playoffs because they got to redeem what happened last year. It'd be nice if they got in and got out and got on the road. But if they don't, first of all, David Hall today said we owe the new coach an apology. And I tweeted David. I said, you know, what are you talking about? We weren't mad at him.
Yeah, exactly.
We weren't mad at him. We were mad at the Hawks for getting rid of Quenneville after 15 games in a classless way for a three-time Stanley Cup champion. It has nothing to do with this guy. But don't tell me Quenneville couldn't have won seven in a row. Yeah. Otherwise, I'll tell you we won three Stanley Cups, and you're going to look silly.
Yeah.
So we weren't mad at him. It's sort of like Wanstead. I knew Wanstead was going to suck. I have no opinion of this kid. They look pretty damn good the way they're playing now, but they still haven't made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to apologize to him. I wasn't mad at him, just like I wasn't mad at Wanstead.
Mm-hmm.
I was mad at the Bears for getting rid of Ditka. But the way that they did it with Quenneville is what I was upset about, and I think David understood that.
Yes, I think that's a great point. I think when you fire a coach so early in the season, it means that you weren't prepared. You know, why not fire a coach?
I will never apologize to the Blackhawks for what they did to Joe Quenneville,
yeah.
A three-time Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, that sucked. It really did. And
I mean, you got to be kidding me, the way they treated him after 15 games, like somebody else can't. Like he couldn't have won seven in a row at the end of the season? Give me a break.
See, Hart 4803.
You think I'm getting a little bit too hostile?
No.
I just got done watching Lawman on the Western Channel.
Remind me, which one
Come
is
on.
That? Lawman is with Chuck Connors? No, that was the Rifleman.
No, that was the Rifleman.
Yeah.
Lawman's by this guy, John Russell. Very robotic type actor. Check him out.
Okay, I will
They
do
play
that.
A back-to-back on the Western Channel. I know what you're going to say. You got to start taking it easy, Mike. I know. I got my Western Channel shows down, baby.
What else can we find on the Western Channel? Bonanza and Gunsmoke, I'm assuming?
Oh, everything.
Oh, nice.
You know, Gunsmoke still sucks to me. I never was a Gunsmoke guy. I like Bonanza. I like the Rifleman. The Rifleman, my God. I know my buddy Bobby Sandless. We call him Ace. We grew up together. He watches the Rifleman every day. He knows the whole line, all the lines and everything.
Holy cow.
We've been watching him since we were kids.
That's amazing. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a good Western on TV for, 20 years or so, maybe more?
As far as movies or on commercial TV?
Just commercial TV, yeah.
Oh, no, they don't do that no more. They don't have variety shows.
Yeah, isn't that a shame?
Come on. I mean, those were great shows. I mean, you got to see the bands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ed Sullivan had the Doors on.
Yep.
Had the Beatles on.
Yep.
Had the Stones on.
Yep.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome.
Yep.
I mean, we were kids and we're watching Mick Jagger getting started.
Yep. Very, very, very
I'm very pumped for some reason. I can't understand why.
Hart 4803 says that Stan Bowman and John McDonough just gave nothing for Joe Quenneville to work with. They let him out hung up in the wind. Let him out to dry, hung in the wind, whatever the expression is. And I have to agree with Hart 4803. They just did a really poor job of player acquisition. And, you know, I'm watching a game the other day. I'm like, who is that guy? Who is that guy? It's like you
they got all the good players and you brought in a different team after he left.
Yeah. Talk about poor.
But they look quick. They looked a lot. I'll tell
yes,
you what. Detroit
did.
Red Wings, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, are they slow
compared
to the Blackhawks. I watched the Blackhawks yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And they were quick. They were a step quicker than the Red Wings. So, you know what? Hope springs eternal. I don't like what happened. I thought they were going to win 5 in 10 years. That's not going to happen. Detroit, for God's sake, when they were in their prime, they for 20, 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the Blackhawks, they made some bad moves. They got rid of Quenneville. I think he could have done the same thing that they're doing now. But that's over with. I just am not going to apologize for the way they treated him. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you there. That was for an organization that has really turned their reputation around over the last 10 years. That was
oh, yeah.
a Bush League move by that
organization. A public relations nightmare that day.
Yeah, really, really.
That was a public relations nightmare. Having the new guy sit there with McDonough, Rocky Wirtz in the corner looking like Hervé Velázquez tattoo. You can barely see his head above the damn table, for God's sake. Right? God, what happened to the guy that changed the black hawk culture? That's what Rocky Wirtz did.
Yes.
I like Rocky.
Yeah, he's a
great
guy.
But my God, you're going to... You did this by your gut. You hired McDonough. You went out and got all these people. And now you're listening to these guys tell you how the team should be? I don't know.
Yeah.
Things change, I guess.
The young Bowman guy, I just don't have much confidence in him. If you remember, it was Dale Talon that brought in the core of the Chicago Blackhawks team. Patrick Kane.
And Bowman's a member of the Lucky Sperm Club.
That's right.
Give me a break.
You got that one.
That guy would be working at the Prime House as the mayor D if it wasn't for his dad. Give me a break.
How true is that? All right, Mike, anything else on your board? We've been on for an hour now, so you want to close this baby up?
We have?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, I'll tell you what. Bryce Harper.
Look,
let me just explain something to everybody out there, okay? Uh-huh. If the guy had hit 290, you know, everybody that says the average doesn't matter anymore, 250 matters when you're asking for $30 million. I don't give a damn how many times you walk, what you're on percentages. If you hit 250, okay, and you walked 130 times, then basically you're a leadoff man. I know you hit 30-some home runs, but my God, the people that are crying, he turned down $300 million.
Oh my God.
Period. I love how people are saying it's the owners colluding. He turned down $300 million. How are you colluding?
Yeah,
right?
Colluding to bankrupt the league, perhaps.
I pray to God, you know what, if the White Sox got him or Machado, I'd be happy because it's a temporary Band-Aid. They're not going to win anything with you. And, Bryce Harper's a talented guy, but to me... You know what? He's not worth the aggravation. He's had trouble with athletes, with Scherzer, with Matt Williams, other things. I just don't see it happening as far as giving him that kind of money.
26-year-old kid turning down $300 million over 10 years.
Can you believe it?
That just is mind-boggling. I mean, how much...
And people are going, well, they don't know. They think it was just for show. You don't put up $300 million just for show.
Yeah, really.
You don't put up $300 million. Who are these baseball fans? I get on Twitter. It drives me nuts. I can't believe these people. I mean, it's business. $300 million. Somebody tells you where, and nobody's refuted that Washington didn't offer it to him.
Yeah,
he
correct.
Turned down. Now maybe he don't like Washington, but I'll tell you what, he had that offer. Juan Gonzalez, who was once a great player, turned down $85 million from a team. He never got that money back. What's wrong with these guys? Yeah,
exactly. They don't get that money back. You can't say no to a deal like that. But now they're saying the Giants, the Giants and the Padres and the Phillies are the top teams in contention, maybe the Los Angeles Dodgers. You think he's going to go to any one of those teams, or you think there's going to be a surprise team coming in and making an offer to Harper?
I'm telling you, man, I pray to God. Look, I have no axe to grind with the kid, but there was guys that were telling me he was going to, last year he was going to get $40 million a year. I go, you people are out of your minds, man. What is Mike Trout worth if this guy's worth 40?
I mean,
my God, I don't care if Mike Trout plays where nobody sees him and he doesn't do commercials. He's a baseball player. That's what he wants to be. If Bryce Harper gets $30 million, Mike Trout's got to get $50 million. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
He shows up every year and plays. Bryce Harper, you don't know what guy you're going to get.
Yeah.
And Machado, all I heard people say he was a bum because he didn't hustle, and tried to hurt that guy at first base. Now only one team wants him. Guess who? The White Sox.
Well, the Yankees.
How many people you hear say they want Machado?
Well, the Yankees and the Padres are two teams that have been mentioned almost as often as the White Sox, I would guess. So do you think there's a chance the White Sox are going to land Machado? I know you haven't spoken well of the guy in the past.
Well, all I'm going to say is this, pal, is that Tulowitzki's on the Yankees. And they seem to be happy with him, although he has been injury prone.
Yes.
But Machado, He's gone down to a contract like Hayward's got, about $173, $180 million for 7 years. That's not the money that he was looking for.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of teams looking for him. I'll tell you what, I like Tulowitzki if he stays healthy, but you can't depend on it. Machado, he could play third or short. I like how Tim Anderson of the White Sox even said, I don't feel like moving. Wait a minute. You're going to pick up Machado and you might not want to move from shortstop. So is Machado going to play third if the White Sox sign him? Who knows? I didn't need to get my blood pressure up this high.
Well, I'm glad
you... I really did.
I'm glad
I really did. We haven't even gotten to the Bulls yet, have we? I mean, my God.
No, we
haven't.
It's
like Clown Town. What can I tell you?
Do you think,
I mean, the whole thing. It's been crazy.
Do you think that the White Sox, as an organization, as a franchise, almost have to sign Manny Machado to keep fan interest? Because, you know, this team has been struggling the last few years, and they almost...
Struggling? That's like saying Lincoln struggled after he took a bullet to the temple. My God.
Struggled to get back to the floor.
My God. He looked up looking for the guard, and there was Booth. That's struggling.
That
okay?
is struggling.
I mean, the White Sox are Lincoln right after the shot to the temple. I mean, no. I mean, they don't know what to do. I mean, seriously. What day is today?
Today is Monday, February 11th, 2019.
Guess what tomorrow is?
The 12th.
Lincoln's birthday, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Oh, I knew I'd work him in somehow.
Unbelievable.
What can I tell you? That's what I do. I just anger people. That's a gift. It's a gift.
All right.
You know, it absolutely is. All right. Oh, by the way, how did you like the new football league?
Yes, we have to talk about this, right? The Alliance.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. The guy got... Listen, Brady would last a year. All these guys that are going to play in the NFL because they're not allowed to be touched. Brady's going to be playing until he's 70 in the NFL. And here's this league. The other night I turned on the TV and the highlights. The guy's helmet flew off. No flag. Beautiful. Oh.
Wasn't it like...
Oh, unbelievable. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just finally, somebody that gets it. If you would have had NFL uniforms on these guys, you couldn't have told the difference.
Well, I don't know about that.
Don't start.
But it was entertaining. There's no doubt about that. It was entertaining.
They had as high ratings as Oklahoma City versus Houston.
How about that for news? Wow. Now
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Now, the trick is, as you know, you've been in the business, will they keep those ratings up the second week? So will the fans come back? So that's the
probably
big trick.
Probably not, and then I'll start turning at them against them all along.
But I was reading up on this league, and you know, their model is really based on a gambling model. They have built an app where you can make in-game bets, for instance, who's going to score the next touchdown, these proposition bets and so forth, and that's what they're building towards. Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea.
I think it's a cool idea, almost as cool as Bears Barroom. I mean, you know, I really do. I love it. And you know what? It's been a lot of fun, Aldo. We've had a good time today, as always. Chris Zorch, I thought, was great.
Oh, my God. What a great guy.
You know, he was up. I thought he was pretty straight up and stuff like that. So it was a good time, my friend.
Hey, when you had that race with Chris Zorich.
Unbelievable.
What street was that? Do you remember
Laverne?
Laverne Street. Down Laverne
Street. Delmont and Laverne, right by Foreman. I'll tell you what happened.
Okay.
Anyway, we're promoting the race for about a month.
Right.
And we used to run, Chris knows what I'm talking about. We used to race for money when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I've raced people in street shoes. I mean, back in the day. And stuff like that. Right down Lincoln Avenue. There was a place called the Moulin Rouge. I won about $200 from a guy. They had jello wrestling back in the day down there.
Ah, nice stuff.
And, at Lincoln Avenue, and some guys were arguing about who was faster than who, and I ended up racing the guy right down Lincoln Avenue, right down the middle street about 1:30 in the morning. So I got on this thing with Chris about racing, and... He said, well, I'll whip your ass. I mean, come on. I go, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So we start talking. I got him on every week, once a week on the radio. We promoted it. We had, and I'll never forget it. It was like, there was like 800 people on this side street. It was unbelievable. 40-yard dash. And he blew me away with the first three steps. After about 30 yards, I was 5 yards behind him. But we're laughing. And you know what? Those are, and it worked. It got the station plenty of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. It was great for Chris. Would that happen today?
I don't know.
Would the Bears even allow that to happen?
Oh, my gosh. That's a great point. No, they wouldn't. They would not. They don't even want Tariq Cohen to do his backflips. It's crazy.
I was racing Chris George on a street with potholes who's in his prime in the National Football League.
Oh, God.
I mean, that would never happen now.
No.
But you know what? All the athletes, Roenick and me, I did all that stuff with the athletes. It was a gas, and people loved it. When are they ever going to see a Chicago Bear race down a side street on the northwest side of Chicago? Those people got that picture forever, and if you see it on Twitter, it's hilarious. Chris has got his tongue hanging out laughing at me, for God's sake.
I think the last guy was Alonzo Spellman, but he was running away from the cops or something like that.
Let me tell you something. Alonzo Spellman is the most menacing human being met in my life. Is a guy that I considered a somewhat of an acquaintance, good acquaintance, or friend. I didn't know it. You just knew at some point he was going to snap. And he did finally. God.
I hope he's okay now because he seems like a nice guy, but my God.
He was a great guy. I love Alonzo, man.
What a physical specimen. That guy had eight.
You know, maybe we'll get him on.
Oh, that would be something.
Yeah, but not in the same studio.
Please, no.
I'll stay on the phone.
All right, Mike.
All right, buddy. I'll see everybody. The Bears Bar Room.
Right. Take care, everybody. Make sure you stick around for the Bears Hour Live Show with Draft Dr. Phil. This is Aldo Dandia from Mike North and Chris Zort saying goodbye.